Today, we are continuing this idea that we've brought up about plodding with these, plodding, slowly moving, faithfulness, right? And today, what I want to talk about is help us to kind of wrestle with this, that the Christian life, the faithful Christian life, is a life of growing in contentment. Now, that's not going to, I didn't say getting contentment, I say growing in contentment. But to put things in perspective, right, we all know what a tantrum is, right? We know very well what it looks like to have a tantrum. Some of us have what we call adult tantrums. We don't, maybe hold our breath and lay on the floor and pound our fists. We might be more advanced. You know, might come with a little heavy breathing, some yelling, and if we're truly grown up, we even add in some grown-up vocabulary to our tantrums. But ultimately, all tantrums are caused by discontentment. We don't have what we want, so we'll have a tantrum. Now, I don't think anybody gets up in the morning and says, I'm going to have a temper tantrum today. That'll make me happy. Ironically, we're less happy in the middle of it, right? They don't actually help. They don't make us feel better. They, frankly, make us feel worse. And kids, I'm talking to you too, because you know you have tantrums. Yes, I got to talk about adult tantrums. And some of you have seen those up close and personal. Pay attention, because the Christian life is growing in having less and less tantrums. It's essentially what it looks like. See, your parents, and I'm a parent, but parents typically want our kids to learn how to have grown-up tantrums, right? It's true. We want you to have these socially acceptable tantrums, but parents, there's some parents probably squirming right now, you know, but we need to be honest. The best thing we can do as parents is admit that we're screw-ups too. I'm guilty. We all are. And thank God we have Jesus, right? I don't get it right all the time. That's why Jesus came. That's what we need to be wrestling and trying to help our kids see that we actually believe that stuff. But we don't want to have grown-up tantrums. God calls us in His Word toward rest and trust, to just stop it. Now, I'm going to show you an interesting place. We're going to zoom in a minute on Psalm 131. But it's in this section of Psalms is what we call the songs of ascent, going up, right? Now, there's a group of 15 psalms. They run from 120 to 134. In these psalms, there is some debate. People think, oh, well, there were 15 steps going up to the temple, and so the Levites, as they went up the steps to the temple, you know, they would sing Psalm 120. Right? Different number at the time. But they'd sing this hymn, and then they'd take a step, and they'd sing the next hymn, and then they'd take a step, and they'd sing. And so they were going up to worship, and they would sing through these on the way there. There is another group that says, no, 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 they were used by the pilgrims, those coming from out of town into Jerusalem, going up to worship, and so they were singing them on the road. I don't know why it has to be either or. I mean, these are songs. The point is, these are songs to be sung on the way, on the journey to worship. Now, we'll see why that helps in a minute. But I think as we think about worship, right, a lot of our worship tends to be about us. I was talking to a pastor not too long ago who was saying that worship, the music, and by the way, the sermon is worship too. We'll talk about that. But the music portion of singing, when we sing, right, the whole design is to get us to feel a certain way, right, to engage us on an emotional level was the point of the way we sing when we're worshiping. And I knew right then we were not going to see eye to eye. Because I don't care. I mean, that's not the point. Hopefully worship does something in us, but that is not the goal. The goal is to stand before the creator of the universe and go, you're better than me. That's the goal. And ultimately, that might move us to believing it. See, when worship is about how you feel inside, then it becomes all about you. Now, we do that. We think about, and I'm not pointing any fingers, please understand, because when I stand up here, right, and I raise my hand in worship, right, and I'm thinking, the new couple in the back may not come back because I look a little too charismatic. Or I might look at them and go, oh, they look like Pentecostals. They might like that the pastor raises, right? Doesn't matter. Because what am I thinking about? Some other agenda, right? We all do that. The sermon is worship, right? We believe that in our tradition. We do believe that in the sermon, it is God speaking to the people, and it is all a part of worship. Now, when I'm up here and I'm thinking, oh, this will really make them like me, and it happens. That does happen. Or I'm thinking, oh, they'll see how smart I am because I came up with that, or whatever, right? Who's that about? Me. And we do that. And we're all guilty, because when you're thinking, dude, you got to hurry up because I got to catch the pregame, you're thinking about you. I mean, we're all in this together, and we all struggle some. But I think what's really important that we wrestle with is that we understand that it's not just Sundays. See, as we've talked about, as this conference that I just mentioned, work as worship, all of life is supposed to be about worship. We are called, we are made for the glory of God. We are called to live for Him, for His purposes, for His agenda, for His glory. And when we turn it to being about us, I don't care whether it's a Sunday morning or a Thursday afternoon, our life will be about worship of us on our agenda or God and His. So the way to contentment, I think, can be found in the journey to worship that we see here. Now, what's fascinating, and this, you got to catch this, I'm just going to give you a quick scan through of these. I'm not even going to look at all of them, but Psalm 120 through 134, the Songs of Ascent, right? It begins, 120, deliver me, O Lord. It starts right here. A recognition, I need to be delivered. And it moves through, and you can, as you read through these psalms, they each have sort of a different theme. You know, God has answered my prayer. I'll worship God. I have faith in God. But here's what's interesting. They don't stay. You don't see this constant sort of stream up, because at some point here, as you read through, there's this dip. Right? There's confusion. There's, I don't understand what's going on in the world. Why are all these people? Why do the wicked survive and do so well? You know, why is all this happening? There's struggling. God, where are you? I mean, all of these questions. There's, okay, I'm going to wait on the Lord. Just a resolution, you know? So the idea being, what we see here, and this is really important for us Americans, because we tend to think, you know, you make this choice, or you grab a hold of this thing, and everything changes. But what we learn looking at this journey to worship songs, and what the people would be reminded of as they're going up to worship and they're singing these, they would be reminded that life is hard. It doesn't get better when you pray a prayer. It doesn't get easier necessarily to trust God with everything. That, yeah, there might be days, and then it's hard again. But it doesn't change the attitude of the heart that says, I will continue to trust you. Like Job, though he slay me, I will trust him. That's what he said. It would remind them that discipleship, being spiritually formed over the long haul, is not drive-through, is not fast food. That it's something that takes a long time and a lot of work, and frankly, it's something that God creates in us more than something we achieve. Are we doing that? Are we, when we hit something, when something comes our way that we don't like, are we saying, God, in my distress, I cry out to you, or are we having a tantrum? Now, I want to zoom in. I want to look at Psalm 131, and I think it will help us. I think it shows us a couple of ways that we can begin to move toward contentment, away from tantrums. It says, O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. But I have calmed and quieted my soul. Like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. Now, what we'll see, verse 1 is all about humility. My eyes are not lifted up. I'm not thinking about all these things out there. Verse 2 is similar, but with an explanation. I'm like a weaned child. Some of you know what that looks like. The process of weaning can be painful, especially in this day without bottles and sippy cups and passies and, you know, they didn't have all that stuff. So all of a sudden, you know, it's a little dramatic. But what's the goal? To grow up. The goal of weaning is to grow up. A weaned child with his mother is a child at rest, right? An unweaned child with his mother, I've seen this, is going to be rooting, doing this, can't rest, looking for something, right? That smell, where's that? You know what I'm talking about. That can't rest. There's no rest there. But a weaned child with his mother is at rest. And we're a people who God calls us to come and rest in our Father's care. And this psalm, I think, shows us two ways to do that. The first, I don't occupy myself with things too lofty for me. The 80s translation is, dude, chill out. We worry sometimes about the most ridiculous things, don't we? I mean, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I know I'd see a lot if I asked about staying up until, you know, midnight, reading bloggers, left wing, right wing, freaking out, right? Late night tweets, healthcare, oh no, are there tapes or not? Right? We worry about these things. Now, we're fortunate enough to live in a country where we have somewhat at freedom of information, right? We have freedom of speech. We can talk about these things, and a couple of us here may be in a position to make a difference. Great, we can. When it comes time to vote, we all get something we can do. That's great, and we should be informed about that. But other than that, I promise you this. Those 3 a.m. Facebook posts are not going to change the world. They're not going to make any difference for anybody except one thing, your own attitude. Are you, your thoughts, are you thinking about these high and these things that are too great and marvelous, like whether or not Trump was recording the conversation? Right? I mean, so what? That's out there. It doesn't matter. And our lives will go on either way. We worry about all these things that, frankly, we can just rest. We also worry about our own stuff. We worry about our bank accounts, or we worry about, you know, the next career move, or we worry about, you know, what we're going to do next year, this dream or this accomplishment, this thing we want to happen. We, you know, think about these constantly. When Jesus told us, hey, worry about today because tomorrow's going to have enough trouble of its own, he was talking about this same biblical principle. Chill out. Don't be thinking about all of this stuff out there. What are you doing today? How many of us even know what it means or what it looks like to live in the moment? I mean, we text at the dinner table. We Snapchat away the most important moments, right? I did a wedding not too long ago, and I looked out, right, on the group, and I saw this everywhere. It was crazy. I'm like, just enjoy the wedding. That's why we got a photographer to pay. I mean, we just, why are we doing that? I think it's because we are thinking more about what could be than what is right now, right? Well, I want to have this memory in 20 years, you know, when my kids grow. Oh, well, you know, that group of people out there needs to know what I'm doing right now. So we think about all this instead of what we're doing right now, where we are right this minute. We would be so much healthier for us. I think it was Spurgeon who, when he was preaching on this psalm, he said it's one of the shortest psalms, but it's the longest one to learn. I don't occupy myself with these things. He says, I have calmed and quieted my soul. This is the other thing. Rest. What's a weaned child thinking when it's laying with its mother? That's it. Some of you know that feeling, right? Maybe a certain family member or someone you loved, and they just hold you and you just, all is right in the world, right? No matter what is going on out there, it's just good. This is what you know right then in that moment. That's what you were made to feel. It's a good feeling. It's called peace, for those of you unfamiliar with it. And it is a taste. It's just a taste, but it is a taste of the new earth that we're made for. See, all the things that we clamor for, right? All the things we're trying to grab a hold of, there are ways for us to find that taste. There's this episode, some of you have seen this, in How I Met Your Mother, where Marshall has had this burger, and it was the best burger he ever ate, and they spend the whole time trying to go back and find that. They're running all over town, and Regis Philbin is in it, and they're trying to find this burger again, because it's just the, and all they're running around trying to grab, trying to get that taste of that thing, and that's what we do so often. We long for recognition. Creator made you. He sees you. He knows you. We want fame. Well, the famous one knows your name. Comfort and security. The Bible tells us he spreads his wings out over us. I had an interesting encounter with Hebrew this week. And that word that's used in several places in the Old Testament where he says he will spread his wings over you actually refers to the soft outer edge of the wing. It's not a wing. We don't have a word for that. But that little, you know, the longer feathers, some of you bird people know what I'm talking about. That's the part of the wing he's just laying softly and gently in order to protect his people. That's what we want. That's what we're offered in the gospel. When we learn to rest, we can begin to taste, just a taste, of what the new earth is. And we can't get that in all of our other efforts. I promise you, they lead to frustration and they lead to tantrums. But when we're calm, not worried, we are at rest, we can begin to taste what God has made us to fully experience. And one day we ultimately will. Now, I know that's a long process. None of us wants to be a fussy baby forever, though. We want to begin to experience this. God calls us his children, not his babies. And I think that's because he wants us to learn to begin to experience rest. Now, as we come to the table today, logistically, there's two tables back there, and in a minute I'll invite you to go and help yourself. But as we come, I want to do it as children of the Father who have been weaned, or who know what that's like, to begin to experience that just a little bit. But first, let me say a quick word about this word Father. You guys can come on up if you want. Father, right? I know. Some of us have bad experiences with our fathers. Some of us didn't have a father. Some of us have not been the greatest of fathers at times. And the word father, I know, we can struggle with that when we talk about God as our father. But I want to point out one thing, if you'll allow me, that the very simple fact that we know what a bad father is means that there is a standard for a good father. One that doesn't do whatever. One that doesn't mess up, no matter what. No, I mean, even if we had the best fathers, they weren't perfect. They made mistakes. We have one who is perfect, who doesn't make mistakes, who knows your name, knows you so intimately, he knows the number of hairs on your head. He knows intimate details that you don't know about yourself, about you. And yet, he loves you unconditionally. He protects you completely. That is our greatest wish, to be fully known and fully loved. And we meet that in the gospel. When we eat and drink this meal, we are reminding ourselves and a watching world that we believe this story, that we have a good Father who has rescued us by the blood of Jesus. Just because he loves us. Not because we did something great. Not because you're so wonderful or cute or you were born in the right place. He just rescued you because he loves you. And he's making all things new, beginning, and this is so important for us to hear, beginning with our day-to-day lives. As we begin to live like a weaned child with its mother, as we begin to live that out, Jesus is in that bringing about restoration. It starts here and now in my heart and in my decisions and the way I live, making all things new. Now, if you don't believe this story, if you don't believe that Jesus came for us and gave his life and you're not sure you buy into that, that's fine. Stay in your seat. Nobody's going to be all judgy. You don't have to. We welcome you to join us and be a part of this meal if you believe it. This is not BCC's table. This isn't mine. It's not. While the elders do our best to be responsible, this is Jesus' table. And if you are here today and you're like, oh, man, I'm such a mess. I hurt. I'm broken. I want to rest on my Father's chest. In this table, this meal is for you, and we'd invite you to come. But as we do, I thought a good way for us to enter into this meal would be to read corporately, to read together, to listen, to hear one another's voices, and read that psalm again to remind ourselves we may not be there, but this is where we are aiming. Would you join me? Oh, Lord.
My heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child with its soul within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord this time.
Jesus came. He was sitting at that meal with his disciples, and he took the bread and he broke it and he said, "This is my